Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by a few members of Proxilla Femina, the all-women's classical music collective.
It's a feminist music collective?
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Nailed it.
I looked at your website.
Preparation station. So we're joined today by Sarah Thompson Johansson, Marissa Abbas, Lily Guerrero, and Sam Ataguile. Thank you guys all so much for coming on.
Oh my, I'm so thank impressed you with your pronunciation.
I've lived in Florida for a while. So, how are you doing today, somebody?
Swell.
Great.
Yeah.
Hanging in there.
Marissa's got a new haircut.
It looks awesome. Yeah.
So, on three, we're going to say happy haircut. One, two, three.
Happy haircut!
Very nice.
It looks
very
special nice. Right now. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a milestone in that this is Marissa's second time on our podcast. Mm-hmm. She is our second repeat guest. Yeah. It is also a milestone in that this is the most people that we have crammed into the Scoppy studio. We are currently 3-1 mic. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed that you can hear us.
Yeah. I may or may not be spooning Marissa right now.
It's a very tender moment.
I mean...
That reminds me of that Office episode.
Yeah.
Where they're like, I'm chopping off Michael's head with a chainsaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you guys, I feel God in this Chili's tonight.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, so we are here to talk about Proxilla Femina and your upcoming inaugural concert. Mm-hmm. Someone shoot me some specs. Tell me what's happening.
There's a lot of pointing at me. Okay, so as far as our inaugural concert goes, that's this Saturday, April 8th at 7 p.m. at Volumes Book Cafe. Our first concert's going to concentrate on women through the ages, so we're going to have music that spans from Handel to Sarah Bareilles, and we're also going to have historical figures and fictional figures, obviously, including Joan of Arc and some of the women from the hit musical Chicago. It's all very nice. Exciting. It's very varied. We're representing, as many different kinds of women as we can. So it's an exciting time that everyone in Chicago should go to.
Indeed. It is a free performance, but we are accepting donations in terms of financial help and paperback books that are going to benefit Chicago Books to Women in Prison, which is a great organization. And a lot of what they need is postage. So even the smallest donation will help and be beneficial for them.
Nice. Cool. That's something that I didn't think about, is that inmates have to provide their own postage.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like
a bummer.
Like right now, I have a piece of mail to put in the mail. Backstory on me right now, I've been up since 4. I have a piece of mail to mail and currently don't have any stamps and it's not analogous, but here we are.
Well, tell us more about the... Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. Anyway, getting stamps is always a pain, and I can't imagine how much more of a pain it would be if you were incarcerated.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And everything's always marked up.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to make incarcerated women's lives any easier, apparently.
Right.
Because we are a kind and generous nation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God
so anyway,
forbid they would want to get a book in the mail
about how
to improve
their lives.
Yes.
So please, please donate, because that would be a kind thing to do. And this is a wonderful organization that is very helpful.
How did you guys find this organization,
Lily?
So after the election, everybody had the oh my god, what do I do? How can I help? Mm-hmm. Where am I needed? So I was looking up organizations, and Chicago Books to Women in Prison is actually in my neighborhood. I live in Ravenswood, and they work out of a church. It's just like a basement with a room full of books, and they have volunteers come in every weekend, and they say, okay, here's the inmate's letter. This is what she has requested. She wants a craft book. She wants to learn how to crochet or something like that. So then the volunteer goes into this huge room of books, and they look for something similar to what she wants. And the great thing about them is that everything can be done online. So even if you can't come to the concert on Saturday, they have an Amazon wish list. And you can go onto their Amazon wish list. It tells you this is how much the book costs, this is how many we need of it. and you can buy it on Amazon and ship it directly to the organization, and then they'll ship it to the women, which is awesome.
That's really cool.
So that's another thing, too. If you can't come to the concert, but you still want to donate, you can either donate to them financially with their PayPal account, which is all linked on our event page on Facebook, but you can also actually pick out a literal book that you want to send to them, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and with the state of prisons these days, you know, something like a book to brighten someone's day is like the least we can do, honestly.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Well, I think another thing that's really cool about this inaugural concert is that it is your guys' inaugural concert. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about the concept of Praxilla Femina, like how it got started, like how what its kind of overarching goals are.
Well, I like to talk a lot, so if anybody wants to start this one.
I think you should probably start this one. Marissa was the catalyst for Praxilla. She kind of assembled women together that she... We are a collective, but we collectively agreed that she
Everyone in the collective can probably attest to the fact that I'm constantly like, don't talk about me during the thing. But yeah, so after the inauguration... I remember having a lot of conversations with a lot of different women in Chicago, you know, performers and not, but primarily performers, because that's most of my friends. And there was such a palpable sense of, you know, shock and frustration and anger and this groundswell of wanting to do something. And it was really inspiring, you know, and I also like to note, like, I wish I was doing that before the inauguration, to be real.
Right.
But, life is life, and this is when we were motivated to do it, and it was really inspiring to see everybody want to do something. So you know, around December I was having all these conversations with people, and I think the idea of some sort of feminist collective or something that focused on women as a group was kind of banging around people's minds. And so basically I set up I sent out an email initially to just some friends that I knew that were, you know, strident feminists that would be interested in doing something, and kind of gauged if people would be interested in meeting to start some sort of collective to start doing something in people's communities and to make music and to, you know, basically take initiative for our own work. And there was interest in that, and so I created a like little private Facebook event and said, please come, and I provided a shit ton of food. And booze, and you know, we had a long meeting where everybody just poured out, you know, their enthusiasm for creating a group like this, and it was honestly one of the most inspiring things I've experienced. It was really beautiful, and it's kind of grown from there. You know, it started as literally me going, "Hey, you're a feminist. Come here." We are really looking forward to growing it past that, obviously, because I think there are a lot of women in Chicago that, you know, would be a wonderful part of this group. But basically, it started really small. It started with a group of people who were really excited to make some sort of change. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of talks about keeping it as a collective and making it a real, you know, group effort, and to make sure that, you know, we have everybody participating in some way, and we have everybody involved in the decision-making process, and, you know, we have our aims at the collective that are on our website, and I think they're quite lovely. Jordan, Chris is actually the one that put those together. Everybody approved it. We had a long, long conversation about it, but Jordan was the one who put it together, and I think that it really articulates the aims of it well, which is, you know, to do groundbreaking work, to, you know, really concentrate in intersectionality as well, to make art that isn't dependent on men. And there's a fourth one. What is the fourth one?
Collaboration.
And collaboration.
And collective performance. We're not making art for the sake of indulging ourselves and just making art and singing because we feel like singing. Every performance that we do is going to have some sort of impact. So this first performance is for Chicago Books to Women in Prison. We're doing a brief segment with Chicago Now at the Give Your Choice a Voice event on April 26th, which is about body autonomy, and it's a pro-choice event. It's the seventh annual event. So we want to have an impact in all the performances that we do.
And we'd really like to collaborate with places like Chicago Now, with Chicago Books to Women's Prisons, mm-hmm. to really make connections in the Chicago area so we can, you know, forward their missions and make sure that the projects that we're doing actually have a vision to help the community and have something that they're saying. Not that there's anything wrong with wanting to make art for art's sake, but, you know, I think a lot of what we want to be doing is to do something with ourselves.
Cultivate change.
Yeah, to cultivate change.
Yeah, there's, that's a big reason why we started this podcast was because, like, it's the idea of, like, go out and make something and action speaking louder than words. In this time, I feel like it's really easy to... We talked recently about slacktivism. It's really easy to copy-paste something and put it on your Facebook, but it's an entirely different thing to actually go out there and impact people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's super interesting because it really touches on... I think it touches on where a lot of people are feeling like... A lot of people are kind of like, I want to figure out what to do. And I think that really sets up my next question well, which is... looking at this kind of collective format. I know this week, actually, we're interviewing a couple different people that are other different collectives, and we've actually, just yesterday's episode, we had a an all-female instrumentalist, mostly new music.
Noise bias. We need to email them.
They're great, and they work solely with female composers that are most recent, which is really cool. One of the things we talked about in the interview was... you know, the concept of getting as many people together, right, and trying to consolidate all of those different voices and different things into one program or one statement about the world is really tricky. And it seems like that's the one of the roadblocks for these kinds of organizations. And so my curiosity is, have you guys come up with that? Are there things that have gone really well? How have you been able to find common ground without excluding?
Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, aside from very menial tweaks in our aims as a collective, we pretty much all landed on the same page about a lot of stuff. We're also in our infancy, obviously, an organization. So while, you know, there's more folks that are interested in Praxilla than the 12 people that are taking, you know, part in the concert, it will develop.
Yeah.
And we'll probably have a better answer to that in 6 months, I think.
Well, I mean, I think even just... forming and recognizing that this is something that you all want to do and form and create is an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, and frankly, with the meetings that we've had so far, there's been a really conscious choice to make sure that everybody is being heard in the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We literally have instated a hand-raising rule, which has actually worked out really well because, you know, I think that there are always people in any sort of group setting that are going to naturally want to make their voices heard. And there are going to be other people with wonderful ideas, but that won't as naturally make their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
And you never want to lose out on people who have some of the best fucking ideas mm-hmm. in our meetings just because somebody else is louder. Yes, Lily is actually one of those people.
Gestures being
Lily has some of the best ideas of the collective.
Podcast gold.
Podcast gold.
That's a pointing. That's... picking up on our things. Yeah, we love that one.
Yeah,
there you go.
We did another podcast recording earlier, and I introduced podcast gold as a concept to that one, too.
Yeah.
Because I keep wanting to do air quotes.
Podcast gold.
I think it's clever for some reason.
Podcast gold is air quotes.
Translates really well.
Yeah.
But that is one of the, I think, the main things that helps us to have productive conversations that are dominated by just a handful of voices.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, everyone... those who are
Sam just started raising her
hand. No idea, like you literally just raised your hand.
I know.
It's very respectful.
Yeah.
Well, because I usually am the one that calls out. So, I mean, everyone's taken on, you know, if they want to take on responsibility, there's jobs to be had and delegated. And if, you know, you want to sing, then you're singing. And it's been a fairly cohesive process so far. We have, you know, same mindset. for the most part.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I forget who we specifically talked with about this, but I think when you start getting into, maybe it was Musical Activists of Chicago, mm-hmm. we were talking to them about the idea of how when you get into these circles and you're trying to make change, you're trying to look at social strata and look at society and say, this is a mistake or this is a problem and how do we fix this and what do we need to do? A lot of those kind of conversations, then you start getting into an area of like, education is a really useful tool, and that can be hard for, you know, because we talked a lot about like who falls the burden of education, you know. Sure, go ahead. No, I can tell I like struck a chord.
So one of the I guess non-publicized aims of the collective is also self-awareness, self-education. We've made a point of creating opportunities for anyone who is in the collective to go on outings together. So we've planned, we went to go see the James Baldwin documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. Mm. We went to the Chicago Volunteer Expo to look for further opportunities where we could be of good use. And that turned out really great. I think Marissa is volunteering with the YWCA.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm working with Rad Remedy, which is a group that helps transgender teens.
Oh, you're helping them?
Yeah. That's yeah, I'm doing database entry for them. Mm. They help transgender teens find resources in areas of the country that are, you know, like Texas, where they're like, yeah. oh gosh, where can I find a trans-friendly therapist or something like that? So right. I do database entry for that and stuff like that. So, yes, there's the music aspect, but I think the social activism aspect is just as important mm-hmm. to the music for our collective. And so we create these opportunities, we look for them and then put them in a spreadsheet and say, whoever wants to come to this, this is an opportunity for you to, I always say, like, get woke or like, educate yourself.
Yeah.
So that we can continue learning as well, because there's always more stuff that you don't know about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that's a really important, especially now, first of all, the willingness to go out and figure things out and to educate yourself and to make yourself aware of what is expected of you in an intersectional community. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's really awesome when a person is able to recognize, like, oh, I've said something that is super not cool, like, mm-hmm. and acknowledging, like, I fucked up, mm-hmm. And then learning from that, it's the power, and we talk about this a fair amount, it's the power of I don't know.
Yeah.
Where if you're posed a question and you may about a community about, you know, that you don't have experience of, mm-hmm. instead of speaking for that population from a place of ignorance, being like, you know, it's not my experience, but here's A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you totally read my mind, because that reminds me so, because I'm very critical of the classical singing community, because I feel like there are so many people that are unwilling to go, I don't know, you know, and like, because of the fact that we're like highly educated and most of us have like 2 or 3 degrees or something, it's really hard to be like, oh, well, you know, I don't happen to know anything about, well, like even, like other perspectives. That I think is a really common trap for highly educated people to fall into, is to be like, well, you know, I have 2 degrees, so I totally know what the plight of a black man in America is. And it's like, yeah. you don't. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't. Yeah.
Like, the number of white women singing Summertime makes me want to fling my teeth off of a bridge.
Oh, girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been asked to sing it before, and I'm like, is there literally anyone else than my Irish ass? Well,
I mean, and we've already had to have some of those conversations with the collective. Like, it's something mm-hmm. that, like, you can never just go, okay, we're woke, we're good. You know,
no,
like, you're constantly...
No one's woke.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. learning
No one's completely woke.
You know, learning and having that humility to apologize and to learn from that and to constantly be, like, working on yourself. And I actually learned a concept that we've talked about a little bit from my YWCA training, that was called culture humility, and I think that that's a really helpful term.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah, just, you know, like, you could have a PhD in, you know, Brazilian studies, but you did not grow up in Brazil. You did not know what it's like to live there. Like, you know, truly to grow up and live there and to, you know, have the entire experience. And, you know, I think to be able to to say that about anybody's lived experience is really
Have you important. Guys watched Atlanta?
Oh my god, the show is amazing.
So, what you were talking, when you said you might have like a doctorate in Brazilian studies.
Oh, yeah.
There's this character, there's this white guy who is like a, who's like an African scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And he like,
he's like telling Donald Glover, like, you need to go to Africa. Like, yeah. You have to go home. Like, and it's like,
yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Like, and like, you're just watching, like, you fucking asshole. Yeah. Oh my god.
Well, he's holding a Juneteenth party.
Oh my god.
Which is like a, like a slavery holiday. Yeah. Or it's like the Emancipation.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's the
Well, it's someone like, you know, Rachel Dolezal, who's like claiming blackness for herself, you know?
She's holding strong.
She
on
is. Does anyone watch The Daily Show? Trevor Noah just had his like, quote unquote, ethnically ambiguous, you know, guest correspondent, Michelle Wolf. And he's like, you know, your sneaker game's on and your hair and like this and that. Like, do you ever want to claim any blackness? She's like, nope, not even a little bit because... I'm not, and I shouldn't do that because you should never do something like that. So, yeah, I mean, being self-aware is really fucking important.
Yeah. Well, so I have, my next question, I think, is I think it's interesting having a subset of classical singers because classical singing, opera especially, has the very difficult terrain of being dominated by white men, especially composers and works and stuff. And so... how have you guys started trying to tackle that mountain?
So do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I know we're open to music composed by and from across the spectrum, but as far as music composed by white men, which is the bulk in the canon, something we're really trying to do is put our own spin and our own perspective on it. I know something we've said is, you know, we'll leave the 846th reboot of Figaro to others, but, you know, maybe there's a different way we could present something, you know, gender bent. I know we've talked about doing like femme bohème, mm-hmm. Which is not a new concept, but something that's been done before. But we, at the same time, were very conscious of wanting to present works by female composers. The piece I'm singing on our upcoming concert is by a Minnesota composer named Jocelyn Hagen, who I'm a huge, just, like, nerdy fangirl of. And, you know, I picked it, first of all, just because I love her work, but I also... was just delighted that it happened to be by a young female working composer. And I think that's something that all of us in the collective are conscious of and want to champion, for sure.
And on this program, we could have, should have included more women composers, you can say, but the female characters that we chose are all really strong characters. Mm-hmm. We're not... portraying the Sopranos plight of, you know, not being able to marry this guy and she's dying of, you know, TB or whatever.
There's
like,
no Gilda.
Exactly. Like, we have Carmen and we have the sisters from...
To be fair, we do have Traviata, but...
Do we?
Yeah.
She was talking about Mimi.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
The other bitch that died of TB.
No, Violetta, like, she holds her own, you know?
Yeah.
Mimi,
She chooses that. She chooses that for herself.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of strong women that we are singing, and Joan of Arc and things like that.
That's nice.
Women with things to say that aren't necessarily just about
a wide spectrum of experiences.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, cool. I know a question I always keep hearkening back to with Chicago-based groups is, and part of this is, I don't have the answer to this, and I don't think anybody does, but I think the thing that's tricky...
Gonna ask you anyway.
Gonna ask you anyway. Well, because I think it's an interesting I think we should be talking about this more. And I think it's that a lot of people that are producing and creating in Chicago, what we end up doing is we make great projects, and they're progressive, they're advancing the art potentially. But, you know, most of the audience are going to be other 20, 30 somethings that mm-hmm. are low income, that are low budget. And it's hard to have a production company go from fledgling to thriving. And I think that's what I mean. I don't think I've seen a company do it well. And so I guess, like I said, I'm not expecting for anybody to have like the answer to that.
We're not expecting like an Excel spreadsheet of like.
Oh, well, we brought one.
Oh.
Oh, good.
Oh, great. I would love one. I just wasn't expecting one.
Yeah, and I guess like, do we try to make things? Do we continue doing what we're doing and make things for us, by us, or is it about? Should there be more outreach to richer clientele? I don't know. That's terrible. Yeah, go ahead.
Who went into music for money? Please raise your hand. You know, I mean, this specifically is really a passion project. Speaking on behalf of myself and for no one else, I was so attracted to this idea because of all the possibilities and the fact that the works are so male-dominated while there are so many women in the industry performing. Mm-hmm. And our voices should be heard. We have something to say. We have visceral reactions to what's going on in the world right now and politically in our country that none of us are going to sit by in silence anymore, and we're mm-hmm. going to use our voices for good. And at this point, I mean, money is not... We debated on how we wanted to go about this first performance, and we chose to go the route of a charitable donation to a wonderful organization because that's integral to us.
It's the heart of what we want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I think the big difference between us and other small music organizations in Chicago is that we're not a music organization that happens to dabble in social activism. We're a social activist organization whose medium is music, because that's the language we all speak the best. And so, yes, we've invited our friends, our singer friends and all that, but really the most outreach that we've done to get people in through the doors is through other nonprofits who are pro-women to say, hey, this is who we are. If you want to collaborate with us in the future, or even just come and see what we do, mm-hmm. we would love to help you raise money for your nonprofit. I reached out to the women who helped organize the Women's March in Chicago specifically, and had them reach out to their network of people, because those are the people who are sitting at home saying, okay, what do I do? Where can I help? And a lot of organizations like Chicago Books to Women in Prison, they are stuffed to the brim with volunteers. They do not need any more volunteers. What they need is money and resources. Mm-hmm. And so if we can put those two things together and say, okay, if we perform a concert, that will bring people in, and then we can ask them for money for you, then we're just the happy middleman doing our job.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That seems to be a running theme. We've talked to a couple people, and it's fantastic. Of the idea of... if you are unable to organize, then you need to be willing to be organized.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you are not a higher up in the ACLU, or mm-hmm. like if you are not like currently a Planned Parenthood volunteer, or everyone's full up on volunteers and you don't know what to do, you need to keep your eyes and ears open for mm-hmm. anything that you can do, whether it's donating a book, donating a couple bucks, you know, it's... You know, like you said, like, these women are looking for postage. So, like, literally a dollar would be fine.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. No, and I think that it's super admirable that you guys are, using your talents as... My 4 a.m. brain went to, like, busking. Like, you guys are, like, busking with a message and then donating to charity, mm-hmm. which is great.
I mean, I feel very flattered that you use the word admirable, but I feel like truly it's like the least we can do.
Yeah. Well, Isabel, another member of the collective, she had said, it is our duty to use our voices for good. Mm-hmm. And that's like a headline on our website. And that's,
good job,
I think
Isabel.
That's, right. Yeah. I think that's the full summation of the whole concept of what we want to do.
It's definitely not a pat on the back, like, oh, look at what we're doing.
No.
It's congratulations. But, like, this is the medium that we excel in.
Right.
Is music. This is what we know. And, you know, this organization is something that where we can help in some way. And, you know, and it is, you know, very new right now, but we do hope to grow it. We do hope to be able to, you know, make a tangible difference in Chicago with the organizations that we collaborate with.
I feel like I could get that, like, tattooed on my wrist.
Yeah.
It is my duty to use my voice for
and you
good.
Have to put, you have to put Isabel Davis Velasquez.
Yes. Yes! Isabel Davis Velasquez Pilatero.
So, going forward from Saturday, like, do you guys have any other upcoming collaborations with other, like, because I know that one thing that I wanted to talk about was, like, intersectionality. So, you know, are you working on reaching out to other groups within the female identity?
Yeah, I mean, we've reached out to a few women who are also interested in joining us just individually.
Mm-hmm.
We've also reached out to different organizations. We have plans to reach out to other organizations that are, you know, music organizations that are doing things that may be similar to us, but that are also different. You know, like, we want to expand as much as we can. I mean, again, this just started as a group of people that I knew.
Yeah.
And I'd really, really, really love to expand it to anybody who wants to join. So, you know, it's really new right now, but, you know, we are actively talking about, like, who do we want to talk to? In what way should we reach out to them? What way could we be helpful, frankly? And going from there. So the first thing that we're doing after the concert is that we're doing, we're performing on Chicago's Now Voice for a Choice. What is it called?
Give your choice a voice event.
And then after that, we do have other things in the works. We're still agreeing on what our next project's going to be from that. For the next thing after that, but we are actively, you know, cultivating projects and people that we'd like to work with and different organizations as well. So it's very much on the forefront of our mind.
Nice.
Well, and I know, because you mentioned the Women's March, which I think is really interesting when you start talking about the intersectionality topic, because, you know, if you have an organization that's founded on intersectionality, I mean, like, the Women's March, for example, is all people of color, the founding members, and the intersectionality is, like, forefront, but one of the biggest critiques of the Women's March from the left was that it wasn't intersectional at all, and in fact it was aggressively insulting to, like, Native Americans that were there, to, like, to Black women that felt silenced. And
and also the trans community, because it was very, like, vagina centric.
There's a giant outpouring of, like, transphobic feminism, like,
yeah.
I always quote this weird Marxist radical feminist page on Facebook that I found, that they were like, but, like, fuck trans women, right? And I was like, oh my god, like, chill. Like, it's like, why? Like, what? Anyway.
In jest?
No, like, genuinely.
What?
Yeah,
what?
No, there's, like, a big contingent
Turks?
Like, transphobic, exactly.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Holy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Transphobic,
yeah.
Something,
yeah.
Radical feminist.
What?
Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's a huge
trans
group
exclusionary.
Of thank
yeah.
you.
That's
yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, yeah.
Didn't know about that.
I'm, like,
yeah,
offended
I,
by
listen,
that, and I'm
know,
not.
Ignorance is bliss on that one, you don't.
Mm.
I mean, obviously know them so you can fight against it, but they're not great. It's
yeah.
not great.
Well, yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, because a lot of people have become radicalized after 45's election, because of the fact...
I call him 45. I don't want to say either.
Yeah, because...
We've made it, like, a podcast policy that we, like, really try not to say his name.
Oh, I don't think I've said it maybe twice.
It's
since
like
it
a
happened.
Trigger, yeah, trigger
yeah.
thing.
Well, yeah, but I think the thing that's hard for that too is that sure, it's radicalized a lot of people, but it's also a game of balancing the least common denominator message. To again, and I don't know why I'm harkening back to this, playing the bringing in different voices and anyway, it's tricky, right? Because like. I guess the question here, again, is, like, how... Yeah, I don't know. We've already touched on it, so I don't want to, like, ask the same question again, but I just...
I think I know what you're trying to ask, and
yeah.
I'll address it. So, when Marissa started the collective, it was, who are my friends that would be interested in this? Marissa is a college-educated, white, upper-class lady. I mean,
Not that that's a bad thing. But who does she know? Other well-educated, white, upper-middle-class white ladies. I said white twice. That's who initially started out the collective. I mean, we've got our Latina contingency over here, me and Sam and Isabel, and we do have queer representation as well. But we had a big argument of how intersectional are we going to be? When does it become tokenism, when you're inviting mm-hmm. specific people into the group, which is not something that we would like? And so I think we kind of decided, you know, we'll make ourselves known, and as people are interested in the AIMS, if they feel that they have a voice that they can lend and they really feel like this is a platform for them to have something they want to say, then we would be happy to have them. But we talked about it a long time, and we felt very strongly that reaching out to specific people and saying, oh, we need a Muslim girl, so yeah. here we go, and oh, we need a Black girl, so here we go, that's tokenism at its finest. And so we'll let people come to us if they feel the need. And then the other question is, okay, well, are they going to feel like it's okay to approach a gaggle of white ladies and say, can I come? Which is the next, the next hurdle that we'll have. And I hope that, you know, with our branding on social media and if they come to the concerts and meet us in person, that we'll be welcoming. Mm-hmm. But that's something that we have to think about.
Yeah. We can do better. We're aware.
I appreciate that you all are willing to talk about it, because I think it's...
Marissa
and I had a long conversation about this earlier today. And, you know,
But yeah, because I think intersectionality is such a potentially thorny thing. And for you guys to be having those conversations is really important. And I think that there is no doubt in my mind that there will be other organizations or other people that are starting other things like that are going to have the same problems and maybe not even handle it as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what we're finding throughout all of these conversations is that transparency is really key. Because, like, the more 100%. Transparent you can be, the more of being like, I don't understand this mm-hmm. thing. Yeah. Like, that is going to be how we all move forward, you know?
Mm-hmm. And if there's any women, like, we've already had a few women that have expressed interest just, you know, talking to people and talking to fellow members about it, that have expressed interest in joining, and we just want to be as welcoming as possible to anybody that wants to, you know, check us out and potentially join. Like, we want it to be a large collective. And, you know, just being welcoming to anybody who's expressed interest mm-hmm. and, you know, collaborating with any other groups in the Chicago area that, you know, our fellow music groups, I think we've talked about a few different ones that we'd like to reach mm-hmm. out to, and just making it an inviting space mm-hmm. and, you know, just trying to be inviting and, you know, learning from any mistakes that we do make, because I'm sure will inevitably make some sort of mistake.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But everybody does.
Yeah, but to have, mm-hmm. you know, to be open and transparent and humble and, you know, work on it.
And there's also something like
Kendrick Lamar says, be humble, mm-hmm. sit down.
One of the, you know, humble. Artistic geniuses of our time.
That song is fire.
I do not
fire.
Say that facetiously. He's amazing.
Song is fire.
I want to clarify that he's amazing.
Yeah.
And also I don't want people to feel as though they have to audition for us or anything like that.
No. We also talked about that. We don't.
Yeah, going back to the whole we're a social activist group that speaks music, it's we want to know like what your passion is. Why do you want to join and what do you want to say? We don't care, you know, if you were a finalist for the Ryan Center or have not even gotten a degree in music. Like, it's whatever. It matters what your voice wants to say. Mm-hmm. Especially because, I'm going to tell a real quick story here. When you get into auditions where it's also you're trying to do a social activist thing, it gets real sketchy. Because let me tell you, I auditioned for a music thing that specifically was looking for people of color. And so I went into the audition, I sang the audition, and then afterwards they have the interview component where they ask you about your coloredness. And so they asked me, so what does diversity mean to you? Why do you want why do you want to be in this group and what do you want to say? And let me tell you, I was the only non-white person in that room. The judging panel was four white upper middle class people staring back at me, asking me, the colored girl, what diversity means to me, and deciding whether or not my answer was good enough for them. So I never, like, I left that room thinking, like, oh my God, even if I sang the best that I ever could, I don't owe them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't ever want anybody mm-hmm. to feel like that. So if you are thinking about joining our group, there's no audition. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting here judging how diverse you will make our group. Like, if you're another white girl that wants to join, that's fine. I don't care. We have a million white girls, and a million and one will be great, because eventually we'll also have a million and one colored girls too. So that's fine. Whatever. Like, we just want your voice and your passion and your need to do something good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Lily's amazing.
Amen.
Yeah. She speaks terms very well.
Yeah. Thanks, girl.
Yes.
Well, I also think it's important to recognize that, like, yeah, maybe, like, we all make mistakes. Maybe there will be one mistake, but compare that to the lyric, who regularly casts white people as black people all the time. Oh, or, like, yeah, will regularly have white people
not
play.
Not just the lyric, operant, you know,
yeah.
in general.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's a problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I have a thought that I hope turns into a question. Okay, I got it.
Right. Scoppy radio subtext.
Yes. Praxilla is a goddess.
No. She was
muse,
a historical figure.
Poet.
Mm-hmm.
Poet.
She's a real person.
These mm-hmm. are things that I could have looked up.
It's on our website now. Who
okay.
put it on? Did Andrea
asked,
give you the info?
I asked Andrea
okay.
to write it, and
yeah.
I edited it a little bit. And
yeah.
then
so when we were voting for the name of the collective, that was the first one that Andrea came up with, and it was wonderful. But then we were like, maybe we should find something accessible. And so we had this whole list of names. None of them.
Most of them
None
were
of
kind
them.
Of dull, like Women's
yeah.
Music Collective.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, but some of them were like
women.
Pussy Liquor.
Pussy Liquor.
Some of them were truly terrible. And so we voted, and Praxilla won, and it's just like, well, you know, it's an unusual name, but let's embrace it. And it has a wonderful, you know, backstory to
mm-hmm.
it. And Andrea, like, so passionately described
yeah.
what it was, and does somebody want to describe
Praxilla
it?
Praxilla
yeah.
was, she basically wrote drinking songs and was a woman in a man's world, like we all are now, if
mm-hmm.
you will, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't considered a legitimate artist or, you know, someone to be looked at, like, as a teacher in any way. But she had a voice and she had something to say, and she's admired now as one of the best lyric poets. I think she came, like, around, you know, a little after Sappho, like, around that time
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Cool.
So she's a cool lady.
Yeah. And one of the big aims of the many aims of the collective is to, like, give ourselves voices, or give women, you know, performers
yeah.
voices, and the ability to create your own art. Like, don't wait to have somebody tell you that you're an artist, and to, you know, push the boundaries of what creative expression could be. You know, we don't usually like to use conventional spaces for our performances. I think in all of our brainstorming meetings, one of the key watchwords is, you know, like, expand outside the box. Like, think of something different. Think of a different way to engage the audience, because there's a whole range of creative expression out there that I think is ripe to be explored. And, you know, why not us? Why not do that?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the
Sorry,
places
we
that
have
we're
cats.
You have two adorable cats. One of the places that we'd like to do is like to perform in is a women-owned art gallery, and we'd like to do some sort of thing where the performance travels through the gallery in some way.
Cool.
Still working that one out.
We have a lot of ideas.
A lot of ideas. But
nice. Truly, though, as a collective, it feels very radical and very freeing to know that we are in charge of this. We aren't beholden to anyone's expectations other than keeping an open heart and an open mind. And that's just, it's a really wonderful feeling, and I hope our audiences have that feeling as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what can audiences expect from your performance on Saturday?
Nudity.
Well, thank God.
About a dress
Someone's
code, and the dress
do
code
it.
Is nudity.
The dress code is leave your pants at the door.
on that? Okay, well.
It's a thematic recital.
Okay.
Concert, mm-hmm. performance. I don't want to say recital because that gives you a park and bark kind of thing. Sure. We are not parking and barking at all.
Yeah.
The space is Volumes Book Cafe, which is wonderful and versatile, and you can set it up in a variety of ways. So we'll be, you know, up and close with our audiences. Yeah. And it's programmed into four parts.
Yeah, three quadrants, basically. Mm-hmm. And it has a specific arc. And Lily was actually the one who came up with it. And it's
yes,
quite lovely.
Yes, that's right. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm sure by now, unless you live under a rock, everyone's seen Lemonade, Beyoncé's visual album. And so the concept for this first concert comes from Lemonade a little bit, in which Miss Queen Bee, Beyoncé, she took Worsen Shire's poetry, who is a really wonderful poet if you get the chance to read any of her work. Anyway, she takes a Worsen Shire's poetry, adds a little bit of words of her own, and uses it to fuse all the songs together into one. It's basically a modern day song cycle because they all end up having to do with each other without actually having to do with each other. You could take them away and they would still stand alone by themselves. And so that's kind of the same concept in this concert where the four quadrants are each a certain feeling. So we have love and lust for the first quadrant, and then it goes into betrayal and jealousy, and then grief and despair, and then suppression and freedom. And so within each quadrant, the songs are about that, but obviously they're different characters, different eras, and then they're linked together with the words of prominent feminist writers. And we try to have a wide range of eras, both musically and in the writing. So I think there's quotes by like Abigail Adams, and then there's quotes by like Cheryl Strayed, and so it's very we wanted to make sure we represent all women, both in the music and in the well, not poetry, they're quotes from mostly just...
Some are poems.
Yeah, some are poems, some are prose. But yeah, that's mostly how it's formed. So you'll see a classical version of Lemonade.
That should be our tagline, Jesus.
Do you guys think that Beyoncé should start a book club? And hear me out. So...
you already had us.
So... it is through Beyoncé that I have found out about two really cool lady writers, and that is Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and then this poet from Lemonade. So, what are your thoughts on the Beyoncé book club?
You know, sign us up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Could she run it? Like, would she run the
description? You know, she has people for that.
Do you think Jay-Z would run it?
No.
Absolutely not.
No?
He's still atoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's really thoughtful in what she puts into her videos and everything.
Yeah.
And
I'm like kind of serious.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I fell into Chimamanda and Worsen Shire the same way. I didn't know anything about either one of them until both Beyoncé albums, and I looked into them and I thought, oh my god, this is really great.
Yeah.
Like, and plus it's from women of color, which is awesome. And I appreciate that she chooses to have those voices heard. And just all of the cultural education that she subliminally gives people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you saw that performance at the, was it the Grammys? Mm-hmm. Where she was channeling an African goddess. And then there are some Japanese culture things in the Lemonade video, in the Sandcastles video.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I don't know if you're familiar with that tradition of the Japanese, when a vase is broken, they glue it back together with gold, and they talk about how the vase is still beautiful the way it is with the cracks because it tells the story of its journey. And she puts all of these things in and doesn't tell you it's there. You just see it and you're like, oh, I wonder what that means. And then you end up on Wikipedia and go down the rabbit hole for 5 hours, and it's because of her. And I that's a really great idea that she would have a book club, because she is just
such
a smart lady. She reads.
Yeah.
And she's educating all of us and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love her.
That's actually... From Sandcastles, that was one of my favorite things to discover, is that vase that I did with the gold. That mm-hmm. was so beautiful.
When her self-titled album came out in 2013, I remember the morning it came out, it was the day of my brother's wedding, and I was supposed to be getting ready for everything, but instead I was, like, listening to the Beyoncé album. And, like, I was, like, in the shower listening to the Beyoncé album, and, like, my mom was knocking on the shower, like, Lauren, you need to, like, the you have to go. And I'm like, but Beyoncé just put out a new album, and I don't have any way to listen to music in my car. I can't. So, yeah, Beyoncé's played a really big role in my life, in that it almost made me late for my brother's wedding.
You were just like, pretty
fire. Yes. And then 2 hours later, my hair was being done, and I was like...
Yes.
Yeah. I'm really sorry that I'm so tired, you guys.
That's okay. This is beautiful. Yes. Let me circle that back around to our conversation on feminism, because I get a lot of people telling me, why do you like Beyoncé so much? I don't think she's a very good feminist. Look at how she just throws herself on stage like a piece of meat.
Right.
For men. That, yeah. And who says that? Some white guy?
Exactly. Yeah. And I always have to explain that it's the choice component and owning your own sexuality. If that's what makes her feel empowered and she feels good about it, then no one else can say anything about it.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite movements within the feminist movement is the body positive mm-hmm. movement. Mm-hmm. Just like the embracing of bodies that take up space mm-hmm. and bodies that don't take up space and bodies of different colors. Like, I think it's just such a beautiful concept, because there's so much shame wrapped yes. up mm-hmm. in how we look.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. like how much space we do or don't take up, and, you know, are we the right proportions, and there are these ideals, but the idea of just like loving yourself for who you are and not what you look like is just like a really, and not even beyond that, like loving yourself for who you are, not what you look like, but then learning to love what you look like, mm-hmm. I think is such a beautiful subset of the feminist movement that as a plus size person, I'm like, fucking yes. So
you are the perfect Japanese vase the way you are.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feminism.
Well, we have a few minutes left. Mm-hmm. As always, we invite our guests to give a 1 minute plug. When we have multiple guests, we usually try and give each of them a minute if they have like things that they love talking about. You don't have to take up the whole minute if you don't want to, but
it can be
the obvious of like what your upcoming event is,
but it, you know, a book you've read, a group that you think is kicking ass right now, you know, whatever you would like to impart to our listeners to check out, you know, what you want to leave them with, I guess.
Should we just go around the circle?
Sure.
Don't start with me.
Me neither.
Sam. Mm-mm, you're too late.
Yep. Oh, man.
All right.
Okay,
Okay.
check out Praxilla Femina's inaugural concert on Saturday, this Saturday, April 8th at 7 p.m. Volumes Book Cafe. Free performance. Free. However, please, we are accepting donations in the form of paperback books and any and all financial resources that you would like to provide to Chicago Books, to Women in Prison. Great organization. Help us out and help them out.
Awesome. All right, so in preparation for your attendance at the concert, I'm going to give you some homework. If you love homework like I do, little nerds out there, get on Netflix. If you don't have Netflix, get on your mom's Netflix. Or get the 30-day trial and see Ava DuVernay's documentary 13th.
Yes.
And educate yourself on mass incarceration, because a lot of people out there are probably like, why do you want to give books to women in prison? They are like... supposed to be staring at a wall because they did something bad, which is, okay, you need to go watch the documentary and, like, live your life and figure things out for yourself. Secondly, I'm not going to talk about my singing at all. You can Google me if you want to find out what noise I make. Secondly, I just wanted to say something real quick about the Pepsi ad that came out yesterday. That
I just watched it.
They
pulled it.
That, finally.
Thank God.
They were sticking by it, though.
Yeah.
If you are wondering, what's wrong with this Pepsi ad? It reminds me a lot of the conversation that white women were having after the Women's March of, what did we do wrong? Why aren't we getting pats on the back for the police not arresting everyone? Mm-hmm. And the Black Lives Matter movement said, hey, guess what? It was your privilege that kept you out of prison. And if you want to do something good for yourself, if you are a Kendall Jenner out there saying, well, I'm not black, how do I help the Black Lives Matter movement? Use your white privilege to help your black brothers and sisters not be incarcerated, march next to them in those Black Lives Matter protests and be there, use your voice, and use your privilege as a buffer. Mm-hmm. And that is my spiel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent.
There's truly, truly no way to follow that.
I'm going to try. And I'm going to start with the whitest thing in pop culture right now, Big Little Lies.
Oh my gosh,
it's an amazing show.
So good.
But I actually want to concentrate. I just got through doing a 40-hour training on sexual assaults, and we also had some domestic abuse like trainings within that training. So watching that was actually a really intense experience for me, because if you haven't watched it, it has, I think, a really visceral and a really nuanced look at domestic violence. Even in, you know, fancy white rich people's houses, it can happen anywhere. So I would encourage you to watch that, because I think it's actually a really good look at abuse. Mm-hmm. And then I would encourage you to, you know, look, I wish that I had like a hotline number that I could give you off the top of my head. I don't remember. But
if you want to send it to us, we can put it on our page.
But there are hotlines out there for domestic violence, for sexual assaults. Please reach out to those if you need them. The YWCA also does really wonderful work here in the city of Chicago, not only with this, but this is what I'm familiar with. You know, we have a crisis center. We also have counseling services for individuals, survivors, and, you know, couples as well, and families, and all sorts of things. So, you know, if you find yourself in that situation, or if you find anybody that you know and care about, or not even care about, just somebody that you know in that situation, you know, like, feel free to call. It happens a lot. I think it's 1 in 5 people, mm-hmm. you know, have been sexually assaulted. 1 in 5 women have been sexually assaulted in the United States. And I don't know the numbers for domestic assaults, you know, right at the top of my head. But it's high.
It's real high.
Yeah. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled. It's something that's important to talk about. So, nice and glum.
I just read an article, or watched a video about how hairstylists in Illinois are going through mandatory domestic abuse identification training.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Where they are trained to look for signs of domestic abuse, mm-hmm. and how to approach the situation.
Yeah. Honestly, because nobody thinks that it happens to them.
Yeah.
And it does.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I really wish I'd gone first, because it's very difficult to follow these folks. But I would just like to reiterate that our upcoming concert is this coming Saturday, April 8th, at Volumes Book Cafe at 7 p.m. Please come.
There will be cake there.
Oh. We're not going to share the cake with all the audience members.
Maybe we will. And that's how you're going to lure people in.
The cake isn't that big, Sam. It's going to be a delightful evening, and it will touch your heart and delight your senses and open your mind if you allow it to. So please come. I would also, I know I've been like creepily fangirling on the composer whose piece I am singing, but she's really fantastic. Check her out. Her name is Jocelyn Hagen. I actually just today on YouTube checked out an instrumental work of hers called Test Flight that is a dance opera collaboration. I need to find out more about it, because mm-hmm. what's on YouTube is instrumental, but it's really cool. And again, like, just check it out.
Yeah.
Jocelyn Hagen, she's cool.
Well, before the cops get us, apparently, we better wrap things up.
There's like 4 or 5 sirens at once.
Yeah.
You guys, it's not for me. I am legal.
Oh, God.
Well, good, because this is not that kind of podcast.
You don't have to let ice in if they're at your door. Jesus
the cat's Christ. Looking nervous at the blind.
He has unpaid parking tickets.
Our cat is... Chicago takes us very seriously.
Our cat is a drug dealer. It's no big deal. Don't worry about
casual.
It.
Casual. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
And if you want to keep in touch with what we're up to, you can head over to scopymag.com. We have articles there, older mostly now. You can head over to Facebook. We're under Scopy Magazine. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at scopymag.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. Fun fact, my birthday is on Monday. We are doing a thing where if you donate before April 10th, we're going to donate the first month of your subscription to Planned Parenthood. So get your monthly subscriptions in for as little as $5 a month. We will send your first $5 to Planned Parenthood. And so if that's not incentive enough to become a monthly subscriber and really help us out, because right now we're trying to get some concerts off the ground, but cannot record it to our liking with our current audio setup. So also, we'd like to be able to have more than four people on, or if we do have only four people on, it would be cool if we weren't on three to a mic. So, head to our website, scopymag.com. There are donation buttons literally everywhere. So we've made it so incredibly easy. I spent an afternoon just planting donation buttons all over our website. I was like, maybe here, maybe here, maybe I'll make a donation page. Also here. Give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.